man. Good to see you. Good to see you. How was your weekend?
It was good. I went to a flower field. Strawberries fields forever in San Diego.
Oh,
I mean, Carlsbad.
I saw the photo of that.
Yeah, it was a flower field.
You know, Strawberry Fields is a kid's
home,
right? Okay.
I know. I was like, that's the only thing that I know to post on Instagram. I was like, who gives it? You know. But by the way, I don't know if it happens to you. Like, I'm the guy, like, every time I go, like, places like that or a museum or stuff like that, I get there and I'm like, you know, like, I get the gist of it and then I'm like, okay, I'm good. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, I understand if you're like, if you go like a great art, you know, connoisseur and stuff like that, you want to have, but if I go to a museum, I'm like, all right, I don't need to stay here for 4 hours.
It's, you know what I mean? It's weird, isn't it? The thought comes across your mind of like, who will know? Who will know if I was, everybody's just going to know that I was here, but nobody will have to know that I was only here for 25 minutes and everybody can assume I was here for 3 hours. But nobody will know. I have done that because that happens on the road, doesn't it? Where you're like, oh, I'll go check out the museum. Or sometimes somebody recommends it or there's a great, you know, a great display going on down at the museum. And then you go down, you're like, all right, I get it.
All right. It's like, okay, I got it. Yeah. Okay. I'm out. You know, yeah. I'm very impatient in that sense. Yeah.
I'll go back to the hotel room and I'll look at this stuff on my computer.
Yeah.
Instead. But because there's a great, have me thinking about this. There's a great museum in Birmingham, in Britain, which is it's right in the smack dab in the middle of the country. But they've got this great museum, and yeah, I did. I used to make a point of that would be the afternoon, killing an afternoon going to this great museum. But I do remember close to the end of my days in England of just walking past the museum.
Yeah.
All right, I get it. There's some old paintings. So.
Yeah, you're like, all right, I'm done. But I heard that you bought some NFTs, or you bought something, or a top as an NBA.
I got roped
fake.
In.
People don't know NFTs are. How do you describe them quickly?
It's called. It stands for a non-fungible token, but it's basically a barcoded internet art. Basically, speaking of museums, it's basically a piece of art on the internet, but it's got a barcode to it. It's got a, you know, how else
that
do
makes
I call
it original,
a,
you know,
a serial number that makes it uncopyable. Yeah. Oh, look, he's Brian, our producer's put the thing up here at a very high level. Most NFTs are part of the Ethereum blockchain. It's all blockchain crypto.
Yeah, Ethereum is a cryptocurrency like Bitcoin or Dogecoin, but it's blockchains. Also supports these NFTs, which store extra information that makes them work differently from, say, an ETH coin. It is worth noting that other blockchains can implement their own versions of NFTs. So yeah, basically you have a thing that's like a picture of something that I can actually Google and see the same picture, but yours is original because it's got some number.
Yeah. Right? Now, were you a collector? Yeah. Yes. Is the answer.
No. Anywhere. I mean, when I was little,
when you were a kid.
I mean, when I was little, I used to collect like, you know, like the albums. Remember, like I think it was like for the World Cup, I had one
like
time
the Panini sticker albums.
I don't know what Panini was, but like, I mean, I know what a Panini is, but I don't know. I haven't that one. I think I had like, yeah, for like, I think the one that I remember was just a soccer one for World Cup. Like you collect the players, right. You know, like and you put them in your thing, you know, like,
yeah,
that's, but I was never, I've never been like, oh, I'm going to collect this card and keep it. I've never been that
person. I collected cards, a lot, basketball, baseball, and hockey cards. And then I did the sticker books as well. Cause I was destroying the cards too much or whatever. And so they were like, the stickers were more, it was my mom trying to teach me to be an organizer, I think. So then I graduated to sticker, which I regretted because the cards were worth more in the end. But yes, to sum things up, I still consider myself, I have a Sports Illustrated collection that takes up a lot of my parents' basement. I have all the covers dating back to the 60s, basically. I've got every Jordan, every Muhammad Ali cover, you know, Wayne Gretzky, you name it. I've got all the Jordan covers. I used to have them up.
Wow. Oh,
so I was, so I am guilty of being a bit of a collector as a kid. And so I thought I would, a dip in. And so I've bought a couple of these NFTs. But I got to tell you right now, it just seems like a rich man's game to me.
It is a rich. Everything's a rich man's game. It's like, yeah, it's people who are rich have nothing else to spend. Which, by the way, because, I mean, our Brian, our producer, is saying, is like, what do you think of the $3,600 Gucci Ghost, which he sends us a picture of? Is basically, that somebody bought that, or, you know. But also, The image that Beeple was auctioning off at a Christie's ended up selling for $69 million, which is $15 million more than a Monet painting, you know. So it's like, so that obviously is a rich, I mean, this is like, oh yeah, I don't have nothing else to do with my money. Which, by the way, if you're rich, you could actually pay $69 million to feed basically the whole Africa, but hey, no, I'm gonna spend something on some NFT that just to say that I have it. You know what I mean?
This is exactly it. It's ridiculous. So it's gonna be interesting what this era is, because as you remember, the .com boom and bust of the late 90s. Yeah. Now we were too young to be
part of it. Yeah.
Yeah, I was a teenager with no money. Anyway. Yeah.
Or also, we just wanted to get high, drunk, or anything.
Yeah, and learn how to approach women. That's
which so dumb, because if we would have done that early on, it would have actually worked to our advantage. You know?
Yeah, if only we went for the money first. That's money first.
Bill Gates. That's what happens when you don't get laid.
Yeah, and it's an exciting. We've got a very exciting night for us. We got the man whose apartment I inherited.
That's right. Which I didn't know that.
Yeah, one of the first comedians who extended a great kindness to me when I moved here and didn't know anybody and have any friends, you know. And
thank you.
And yeah, well, you are on that. You and him, I would say you and him were my two first friends on the circuit.
Which, so. Well, actually, he gave you an apartment. I just told you to come. I just watched you at some show, and you were like, you gave he's funny.
you gave me a lift. You gave me a lift to the Comedy Magic Club.
Hey, okay.
So
it's the same thing. Hey, what I gave you was an NFT.
yeah, man.
I gave you a lift of 1,000 lifts.
That's right. Let's see how that works out in the apocalypse, if I can exchange it. Does anybody have any food? No, but once upon a time, I got a lift from Francisco Ramos. Does that help?
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Orlando Leyba is his name. A fantastic comedian. And we're getting him off the back of playing The Tonight Show. He just did The Tonight Show with Jimmy Fallon.
Mm-hmm.
So
it was great. And then we talked about, too, where, his upbringing, how he, which was very interesting, his whole journey of, like, of actually traveling when he was little, because he did a lot of traveling when he was little.
That's unique answer that he had. That was
very, very unique.
I did not see that one coming, man.
And also, he carried, you know, he's not a superstitious man, but he also travels with a rosary.
Let's let them find out the answer. But
it's funny to say that, but it's funny.
I thought it was hilarious that I'm like, are you a superstitious man? And then he goes, no, I'm not superstitious, and then gives us that answer.
Yeah.
Funny. So it was, what a treat, man. Like I consider him a great friend, and it was a really fun chat, wasn't it? Our producer already said this is his favorite, most flowing chat that we've had with a guest,
which he says for every episode, but thank you.
He does.
All right, we're ready for episode 22, Orlando Leyba. Let's do it. Bye, Alu.
I want to congratulate you on a return performance at the Tonight Show last week.
Oh, and thank you. Sorry, guys. And all kind of stuff is falling here.
And you know what they say? They say first the Tonight Show, and then JJ and Francisco's podcast, and then the world. So you're on step two of the domination. It's all upward trajectory.
This
from
is
here.
Part of my Tony Robbins plan. He says you have to set a plan in motion. So it was like Tonight Show, and then go on with JJ and Francisco.
Yeah, buddy. So you're almost there. Two-thirds of the way there, buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Congrats. That's awesome.
Yeah. So have you had any apprehensions yourself then, like now being in Vegas? Because Vegas, to me, is one of the, for lack of a better term, it's been the loosest of the American states. They even last year they seemed to be a bit reckless. I would have been maybe a bit intimidated, but this is what I'm wondering.
No, I wouldn't say that. I think who tops everything is, you know, Francisco and and I know who's topped everything, and that's Florida. Florida's been 1,000%.
Yeah, that it doesn't exist.
Yeah, yeah. Like you do, right. You would have thought that their cousin Texas would have been really adamant, but Florida doubled down. They were like, "Nah, dude, you're not gonna take this from us. Yeah, we're gonna legit try to get as many people out in these streets."
Yeah, you Florida know? Was like it never. Yeah, because I know Nevada. I haven't been there since the whole thing, but I've seen like they, you know, and I've seen people. You have to wear the mask, you know, while you work in the casinos, and they have this stuff. So it's kind of
like this weekend, it was even hard to get a taxi because, I'm not saying you're all the way wrong, JJ, but it was like it was hard to get a taxi because, they didn't even know that the Rio had opened. So March. March 14th, 2020, I was working at the Cellar in Vegas, and we didn't do the Sunday show. Our last show was, I believe, the 13th or something. And that the 14th, it was shut down. Lights out on the Rio. Like, everybody checked out. See you later. And they hadn't opened till last weekend. So even the cab drivers didn't know that. We were open. They were open at the time.
All right. I think because the rest of the world is under the impression that Vegas has been quite rebellious. Vegas has been out there having parties. There's been footage of the walks and stuff. But that's all right. That's cool.
Yeah. I guess it's because I'm from Florida and I just saw what Florida looked like. And I said, no one has topped Florida. Only thing that could have probably topped Florida was Brazil. Yeah. And
I was in no way trying to suggest that they vote. Yes, we're all aware of the spring break and the hot tub parties that.
Like, listen, I went to I have wonderful pictures, and I love that management crew at the Miami Improv. So when I first got word that, like, hey, your set got approved for the Tonight Show, I was like, well, where do I run it? And it just so happens that I was going to Miami to visit the family. I had to go see my mother. And Preacher Lawson was out there the whole time. While we were all inside, Preacher was like, man, I'm indestructible. I'm out here, you know? And he took his vitamins, and he was cautious and wore his mask and washed his hands. But wherever there was a club that was open that he could go and do time, he was going to go do time at. He was going to go get booked at. And congratulations to Preacher Lawson because he recently purchased a house. And I'm proud of him for that.
Nice.
So he was at the Miami Improv. And I said, hey, man, I need to run this. Can I do some guest spots? And he was like, yeah, come on down. I thought I was going to get social distance.
Not at all.
And at the Miami Improv in Doral. So it's like I took pictures, but just not to put anybody on blast, I didn't post not one single picture. I have them on my phone, but it was like no mask, no nothing. And like one of my one of my jokes came from that experience where I said, oh, you guys don't even believe in wearing masks. Like, you know, I wear a mask just in case. It's the same reason I tip homeless people, just in case they're Jesus. You know, like, that's I wear a mask just in case, buddy. It doesn't hurt anybody.
Yeah.
They were not.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, that's why I was like, I wanted to get vaccinated before I even told, like, my agency or my manager to be, like, to book me in Florida or Texas. Because I was like, what's the point of, I knew I wasn't going to be, unless I had something like what Orlando had, which is like, well, I need to run it. Cause it's you know, but if it was just to do spots and stuff like that, or for a weekend, I was like, cause I knew like what you said, Orlando, like if I go to Miami, it's going to be like, nobody's going to give a shit. So I'm like, I don't want to be like, you know, like weird out, you know?
Yeah. It's a weird world. And even doing the Tonight Show, it was a whole different animal this time. you know?
Right.
It was like, get tested here in California before I got on the plane.
And you're going to
fly over there. Mind you, you're gambling. You are gambling 100%
on your dream, on your journey.
Side note, I'm fully vaccinated, but fully vaccinated doesn't mean you can't
that
test
you can
positive.
Get it. Yeah,
all the vaccination does for you,
it just makes it nice and easy.
Yeah, yeah, you're not gonna die.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you're not gonna have to go to the hospital, but the chances of you catching it are still there.
Yeah, it's an immune booster.
I get it here. I get the test done here, and then I land in New York, in the hotel. You know. Usually you get to bring a friend. You know, my wife has gone to every other one that I've done. I always try to bring a comic that's never done it because that's like old school Johnny Carson type of vibe where, like, I think Letterman brought Leno to his first Tonight Show and vice versa. And Leno would bring a comic that, like, hey, come with me and you be my guest, just so they could witness.
Maybe the member shouldn't have done that, because then he would have. Then he didn't show.
I'm wondering, you're giving a reason
to steal your show.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if Letterman had a choice. He just had to bring like the guy who's always there. He's always asking to go play the star. All right, fine, Jay, you're harmless.
Yeah. So none of that happened. The only, you know, my wife, out of support, she flew. She was actually in Miami with my mom and her mom, taking care of them. With paperwork and stuff, just family issues that's going on. And my wife flew from Miami to New York. And then I walk to 30 Rockefeller. And then they're like, all right, security guard by my side, handler on my other side. And they basically will not let me out of their sight till they take me to I didn't even pay attention in the elevator what floor it was. But when the doors opened, it was just a lab. That's what it was. The whole floor. A whole floor of just people in scrubs testing. Because imagine, they're...
You know what I love about this, buddy, is that every element of this story that you're telling sounds like it's out of some sci-fi film.
Yeah.
Where you're that, like, the soldier or the person who's carried the package across the country.
Mm-hmm.
You know, through barriers and underground. And to deliver it. Only in this case, it's just you and your jokes.
Man, my jokes.
Yeah, like arriving at the biosecurity door. I'm here with the package.
Yeah, dude. And then they go and plexiglass and like here. And then they're like, shove it up your nose yourself. And then you do it yourself. Right. Yeah, and then they did a rapid one. And now I'm in a room and everybody's kind of like making eye contact with each other. Okay. They're, fingers crossed. We're just waiting on this... on this thing to happen, whether it's going to be positive or negative, because it's an instant, one of those rapid tests. And that's it.
Wow. Yeah, that sucks.
Yeah, and I'm dying to know that, because this is obviously, I mean, I'll assume this is a tough gig. I mean, I'd like to think maybe the audience is totally up for it, but we got a social distanced audience. They're probably masked up as well, so their laughter is slightly muffled, I'm going to guess.
Yes.
So not your easiest gig, I'm going to assume.
No, I just leaned into the positive, and I was just like, man, there's an audience in here. It wasn't completely packed that I can see the gaps, but there's enough of an audience there to have the energy in the room of a live audience. And everybody's vaccinated also. Everybody that was in there is also, because they're all first responders. That's the only type. You got to be a first responder to be in the audience for Jimmy Fallon. That's how he's the only guy that's been able to maneuver through all this, you know?
I got it.
He's kept comedy up. And, you know, before that, I had taped it. I taped it down in Venice at the Venice Comedy Compound. I had taped the set. Mailed it in, they approved it, and we're gonna air it, but then restrictions loosened and they were like, well, can you get to New York and you could do it in studio? I was just like, dude, I'm not gonna pass up.
Yeah, of course. Better to do it over there,
And I had just received the blessing where I did 2 road gigs in Iowa, and I'm so glad I took.
So you were already warmed up with it.
Not that, Ramon. I had the Francisco. I called you by your last name. I said it wrong.
Is this like you're still sleeping? Is this a night?
Yeah, pretty much. No, it just gave me.
Leave me alone.
No, because Francisco Francisco's really good with money. So me and him talk money every once in a while. He understands what it is. I still don't know what money is, but because of those two gigs in Iowa, I had the financial capability of getting over there and doing everything, you know, that I could just be relaxed and not worry about anything, you know. So
nice. That was great. That was good.
So I've been I traveled during the pandemic, so we can talk about travel as much as you want.
Yeah, well, we've already brought up the great state of Florida, so yes. I am dying. And then there's also a special topic that I'd like to get to, but let's dig into our usual stuff of finding out about our acts and the starts of their careers. And I'm going to assume, because I know I associate you with all the Florida boys that I've met here in L.A. Yes. since I've been here. Yes. I'm under the impression that you guys came here together, but I might be wrong on all levels. So can you walk me through, like, you started in Florida and eventually with there was like three or four of you that came over together.
Okay. Fast forward the open mics, everything. I'm in Florida at the Miami Improv. I got lucky. My first time on stage was at the Miami Improv. So I do my first time on stage doing stand up is at a professional comedy club, not in a bar and everything. I fall in love with it. I'm doing it. And a certain group of guys, in their own way, take me under their wing. Because I'm a little bit older. I'm 32 years old. So I got lucky because I don't have to hang out with the 18-year-olds and 20-year-olds who are doing comedy. And that group of guys was the first guy that told me, hey, man, you're really funny, is a Florida guy that he's out here, Dave Williamson. He told me that. Second guy that looked out for me was John Wynn. Because he started a web series locally in Miami, and we did that called Labor Days, and he brought me in. Perfect role for me. I didn't have to talk. It was all just facial reactions. My name was Silencio in it. And then the third guy.
Your name was Ramon.
Yeah. And then also Ramon Garcia looked out for me, but Ramon Garcia never crossed over because he started featuring directly from Miami, Lisa Correo, and the first time I met this dude, he was yelling at me because I ran the light for Shaw.
Wait a minute, hold on, because this is the way a lot of people first meet Forrest.
Yeah,
it's getting yelled at.
He was yelling at me. He yelled at me in the you ran the light. You don't do that. Right.
Yeah.
Fast forward, my brother now. He's my best friend. We talk almost every day, you know.
Yeah. Fantastic guy.
Yeah, we lived together in LA when we lived together in LA. And
did?
Yeah. And he was my roommate for a bunch of years. He bought a house, and then he buys a house, a blessing, like 5 minutes away from where I live. So it's like, you know, today. Like, for example, today he's like, hey, I'm on the road. I can't make it home to walk Arnie, his dog. And I'm like, yo, I'm around. And you know what I'm saying? And I went and I walk. He's my best friend. He's my brother.
That's very
cool. The first guy to come to L.A. is Dave Williamson.
Okay, right.
Okay. So he comes. He tours all of the whole United States with GoPro cameras, his wife, and his two sons. His wife is a teacher, so she's teaching the kids, and they don't really have like a motorhome. They have what is called a fifth wheel, which is like a motorhome that gets pulled by a vehicle. So he's doing that. He sold that to Nickelodeon or something, or Nick at Night Mom, Nick Mom or something. He's the first guy to cross over. Second guy to cross over is Forrest Shaw. He crosses over. Third guy to cross over is me, you know? Right. So by the time I got here, two of my good buddies already have the lay of the land.
Yeah, all right? If I can clarify this for anybody who's listening to us, like internationally or in Britain or anything, this is a more epic move than even going from Scotland to London. I just want you guys to know, like, we're talking all the way across the United States from Florida to California. It's quite, it's about as far as you can travel within your own country other than Canada and Australia.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? Well, you could technically go to Alaska or Hawaii.
Also,
I had as a friend a guy by the name of Michael Yeo. who in Miami, he had the number one radio show. And he used to live in South Florida. And for years, he still had the number one radio show in the afternoon. And people thought he was still living in South Florida. But in reality, he was living in California and just doing the show remote.
Yeah.
He looked out for me. So these are all the people. I name all these people because pretty much these are all the couches I slept in before I got my place. And but I had it so easy because I knew what neighborhood to move into. I didn't end up in like a bad neighborhood. I pretty much, my buddy Forrest lived in the Los Feliz area. And I was just like, I kind of like this spot. And then I found a spot in the same area that then I passed that spot down. Fast forward to JJ when I moved. Yeah, when Forrest and I became roommates and we moved over to our Narnia, which I don't say where I live now because I love where I live and I never want my rent to go up. And I don't want people to start moving over here.
Yeah. That brings me to something I was excited to say. So I am broadcasting from Orlando's former apartment because the same kind of kindnesses that Orlando was talking about, he extended to me. Because when I first moved here from England, five and a bit years ago now, and Orlando was like, had this apartment. And I got to say, man, I love this area and I'm not far from Hollywood Boulevard. And the fact that Orlando had just met me at this point, Francisco, like it's back when we first met as well, Francisco, when I first moved here.
Yeah.
And to have that kind of extension of friendship from somebody of like, hey, why don't you take over my apartment? The rent control was amazing.
No, but you're forgetting part of the story, which it was that we were going to all live together. But we're all like grown men, and I kept looking for, because I'm good at finding places. So I kept looking. Right. I wanted to find a perfect place. And the perfect place in my world was like apartments where everybody has their own bedroom and everybody has their own bathroom.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't find that. And the best thing that I found was one where it was like I found a townhouse, and then this townhouse had two because you can't say, according to HGTV, you don't say master suite anymore because it sounds racist. So it's called owner suites. So each bedroom was an owner suite. Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Owner suite. And then it had like a half bath downstairs. So Forrest and I being closer, I was like, yo, this is what we can do. And then I called JJ and I remember, and JJ, you could take over my spot. And then me and JJ, I had gave JJ the key, not only the physical key, but the key of how to have an affordable apartment in LA, which is both JJ and I came to LA with a bag of money, and we would tell our landlords like, here, I'll only pay this much, and they'll be like, I don't want to say the number. But it was like a ridiculous number compared to what everybody else is paying in Hollywood. And they were like, we can't do that. And I told my landlord, but I'll pay you the year. I'll give you a cashier's check. And you don't got to worry about some kid whose dream, he gives up on his dream and breaks the lease. You'll have the year paid in advance. But that's because I read a blog that when you move to LA, Hollywood, so many people give up on their dreams and break their lease. Because they run out of money within the first 3 to 6 months. And I was paying this lady like a whole year.
But you know who wrote that blog? That lady, your landlord. Yeah, that's why.
She's a genius.
She got you.
I tell you what, buddy, because it's still the same lovely landlord, same lovely lady.
Yes.
Like, so she adores me, but I used that strategy right away. I adopted your strategy. I went started going 6 months in advance. And then eventually she said, don't worry about it, just pay me on the month. And I was like, all right. So I've worked into that, but that is a really great strategy that works if you can show your commitment ahead of them. And I just want to say, because I know I complimented you on this before, but now that I've started streaming and stuff, so I had to rewire the apartment a little bit.
Yes.
But and I think I called you a couple months ago to tell you because of all the new wiring and stuff. But the work that you did in this apartment was beyond comedian capabilities. It's not...
Yeah.
It was wired by a professional. Like what you.
Oh, did, the way I ran the cables and
the running the cables and
they're stapled and everything. Yeah.
Holy cow! This is not a comedian's handiwork. It is now. Now that I had to rip it all out and because I'm running something to my TV and then across the room and all this extra shit in order to stream. It looks like a comedian did the job.
No, that's also a guy who was very lonely and whose wife was still in Florida. And it's like, I had to, I just had to figure out ways to kill time, man.
That's also a guy who watches HGTV.
Yeah,
awesome. Yeah, no, because that's, but I wanted to go back to like when you, because you grew up in Florida. So I want to go like when you were with your family growing up, when you were little, did you, what kind of like travels did you do as a family, like for holidays and stuff?
So here's the thing, Francisco, like our family was really, poor, like really poor. Right. But here's what happens in my family. My mom crosses from Dominican Republic to Puerto Rico, which is U.S. territory. So gives birth to me in Puerto Rico, which makes me a U.S. citizen. Mm. Then my mom gets...
Was that plan? Was that like the plan of your mom?
No, that wasn't planned. I'm completely an accident, baby. I'm the best accident she ever had.
That's a good accident.
Yeah. Then she gets encouraged by the government to go back to Dominican Republic, you know,
by the Dominican government.
Yeah, they find some things come to light, and they're like
encouraged.
She gets encouraged to go back to the Dominican Republic. So then now I moved to the Dominican Republic. So my first trip, I still got the picture in one of my photo albums of my first passport, is at 6 months old. Mm. So at 6 months old, I go back to the Dominican Republic. Now, I'm a U.S. citizen. This is 1977. You don't have dual residency. You can't have like Dominican residency and American residency. At this time, it didn't exist. So every month that I stay in Dominican, I have a certain amount of window. This is hard to explain to some people if they haven't traveled. I have a window where I can be in Dominican Republic for a certain amount of time before I now have to start paying the equivalent of taxes to the Dominican government in order for me to leave on the way out. Right. So before that number would get too high, they would buy me a plane ticket and they would fly me out of Dominican Republic. So as a kid, I flew by myself with flight attendants. I used to wear a little suit. My mom would dress.
Right, because your mom's not allowed.
My mom, there was an agreement where she would no longer go to airports.
holy cow!
So
what? Just how old did you? Were you a toddler?
Yeah, I'm a toddler, and they're flying me out. We did have some relatives that lived in the States, and they would come, and we had a relative that lived in Puerto Rico. God rest her soul. Mi tia Lidia, I call her mom also. She passed away years ago. And she used to take care of me in Puerto Rico. So they would get me out of Dominican Republic. And that plane was like a short little, you know, flight. It was probably like a 30-minute flight from Dominican Republic to Puerto Rico. You lasted more time on the ground and doing all the stuff getting on the airplane than what you did flying. And they used to fly me out. So she would either come and get me, but every once in a while they would send me up to New York once I got older. And there I flew with a flight attendant. And I just remember having the little suits, Eastern Airlines and Eastern airline silverware, like actual physical silverware that had the Eastern Airline allowed. Logo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you were like a mule, but without the drugs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like you were like
an adorable mule. Like, if they were smart, they would have just under my suit. Sabanero. It should have been nothing but packages. And they're like, look at this cute little chubby kid. And I'm not even chubby. It's just all the packages that I'm transporting.
Oh, man, that's quite the childhood. When you were going through all that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crazy. You're leaving because technically you're leaving your mother behind. I'm sure there's a lot that you didn't understand.
Yeah.
what were you thinking when you're doing this? Did you know that you're going through a process to keep your legality?
I was
I don't want to go to America. I want to stay with mom.
No, because like compared to Dominican Republic, even though I'm telling you that I flew with a little suit and they would actually pay like a flight attendant. And by the way, this was a collection, like the whole family would collect money to help out my mom and get me out of there before everybody kind of knew that it would just be more expensive. I was also one of the youngest kids in the family at the time. So everybody had, and I've always been, you know, adorable. So it's like everybody genuinely like loved me. I was loved. I wasn't told I love you, but everybody showed me like we don't mind having this kid around. And my mom taught me.
You were in a suit, so any yeah, kid my mom, so like adorable.
Dude, I was yeah. I was
and
six.
Alone.
Yeah. Look.
It's adorable now.
No. Yeah, no. The hair was combed to the side with the part, and. It was crazy, man, because at 6 years old, just the level of what my mom implemented in me, like I knew how to eat with a fork and a knife and how to cut the meat and switch hands. I was like a little grown ass person. That's what everybody looked at me as.
Little giant.
Yeah. But once the suit came off and I was in Dominican Republic, there was the showering out of buckets. There was no electricity. Electricity, every once in a while, you kind of paid a guy that would climb a light pole and he would run a cable down to your house and hook you up with electricity. And he never died. Never died. No safety harness, no nothing. This guy would do that. And I lived that life. So, and then I would come to the state and it's like, wow, I can flush the toilet anytime I want. And the lights are always on. And yes, I might be sleeping in the couch. In Dominican Republic, I had my own bed. But it was kind of like I was living this dual life of what life is and what life could be.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I thank it. I give thanks now because fast forward, this guy, I don't want to refer to myself in the third party, in the third person. But it's like then I looked at my wife, I'm like, I'm gonna cash my 401k and move to California and become a Hollywood star. Like no hesitation, no nothing. And it has to come from that era of me being a child and doing that and living that life that I did.
Yeah. When did you officially become a resident of the continent? Of
like the continent at the age of seven, turning 8 years old. Because I remember being here and like turning eight. But before that, I was already like traveling. Here's the thing, Jay, they would also put me in school. So educational wise, they dropped the ball hard.
Okay.
Because they would put me in a school in Dominican Republic and then they would put me in a school in New York City. And like, Francisco can relate to this. In our countries, even if you're in school, you pretty much wear a uniform.
Yeah,
you wear your little khakis, you wear your, you dress up, you wear like penny loafers. And
your
then my,
things,
yeah, my beautiful, wonderful aunt that passed away, and I used to call her mom also, Tia Lidia, was very goofy. Because talk about not reading a room. We live in the Bronx, New York, when I'm staying with her. And she's still dressing me up like we're in the islands going to school. So my first day of school, I'm in the Bronx in public school, you know. And I'm wearing I'm wearing khakis and penny loafers. Dude, I got chased home to the apartment every day.
Yeah,
every day,
look how adorable he is. Let's give him a wedgie.
Yeah, no. They wanted the backpack. They wanted to take everything from me. They were like, "Nah, we are." And I didn't speak the language. I could never land. I didn't really land the language till the age of seven. Like I knew curse words, but I could never fully communicate with people till like 8 years old. When I my mom was here in the States, my biological mom, and it's like, this is it. We're living in Florida now. And that was
right.
It.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
That's going to be tough. So I'm dying to know then, you, because to me, if you're doing all of that travel when you're such a young kid and you're going back and forth and you're trying to adapt to a new country. So all of that, you must carry a bit of that with you into your adulthood. So are you a superstitious guy? Like, do you travel superstitiously, or do you have like any kind of tokens in like good luck charms in your life that you try to have with you?
No. It's not superstitious. It's just who I am, as I guess part of my culture, part of like how my mother raised me. I have a rosary that's made out of wood, and I just feel comfortable with it because it's like the whole rosary is made out of wood. There's no metal on it. There's not. It's like from the earth, 100%. And I put that in my backpack. I put that in my pocket. It's a spiritual and religious. I think it's more like a spiritual, but it's something that's like family,
right?
That because it was given to me. So that's the thing. I travel with that. Certain shows I perform with it in my back pocket. You know, I look for it. But I've also been. I can tell you that I've been in situations where I look for it, and I panic a little bit.
Right, yeah.
And then I just kind of like everything else in life, I get over it. It's like, all right. I don't say, oh, the plane is going to fall or I'm going to have a bad set.
Yeah, okay.
It's kind of like, oh, it's still with me no matter what.
That comes with being more of a veteran comedian as well, doesn't it? Because I think about some of the superstitions I used to have on the road too. And they used to you know, really hold me back. I was like, oh my God, I didn't bring my lucky shirt with me or whatever that I was going to wear tonight. And then, about, I don't know, 12 years, 13 years into your career, you start going, ah, fuck it. It'll be okay.
Yeah.
gotta just not focus on it anymore.
Yeah.
I think it's more important to have it in your hand when there's turbulence on the plane, you know, just to start praying on the beats. I'm like, oh my God, please.
I've had really bad turbulence. I was going to Jamaica with my wife, and the plane really hit bad turbulence, and the guy next to us with his wife, it was like a sitcom, man, just completely the highest pitch scream, but multiple screams. This guy was
the guy,
and it was like written. It sounds like I'm just reading out of a sitcom script. But the wife or the girlfriend or the fiance, whoever she was just looking at him so disappointed. And my wife and I, Vanessa, didn't help because we just bursted out laughing.
Of course.
We were laughing, like, but not like laughing discreet, like laughing to his face. Like, you just did that.
The plane is still going insane and you guys...
Well, and by the way, that turbulence of the plane going to Jamaica was due to the plane's coffin. Because he was getting into close to Jamaica, you know, and the whole weed, you know, there's like, that's what happens.
All right.
By the way, I wanted to ask, like, so you have the rosary when you walk, but what about when you're when you go into shows, you know, when you're on the road, and then do you have any hobbies or what do you do while you're waiting around to go do a show? Because we all, you know, we all travel. That's the thing about stand-ups. Yeah. We all by ourselves most of the time. It's like, and then we get there and then it's like, all right, we have to like, now we have to wait until 7 p.m. for the first show. So do you have any hobbies or things that you like to do when you're on the road?
No, I really don't. I've never been let's go hiking or let's go do this. I've tried it a couple of times and it just doesn't feel authentic to me because I guess I'm too focused on the show that's going to happen that night.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like I can't go on this journey like a Leo Flowers. If you're with him in Vegas,
he wants
to go hiking. And it's like, you want to go. And it's like, no, dude. Like,
I'm going to be tired for the rapid. Yeah, like, it's
yeah,
like,
it becomes more about the show. It becomes, I'm focused on what it is. And then I don't go anywhere after because that's when I'm, so my superstitious is if something bad's going to happen, it's after that show.
Right.
So it's like, hey, come over to our house or come and hang out at the bar. And I'm a married dude. And Seinfeld said this and it stayed in my head, which is like, if you're in comedy and you want to stay married, just go home. after.
Yeah, don't get into the, it's like falling into the trap. Like you see the trap, don't walk in that door. Yeah, it's just work, yeah. You know.
And you know, me being the youngest out of all my brothers, I kind of like, my mom used to say in Spanish, a puro trompezone, uno aprende a levantar los pies. Meaning, tripping is how you learn how to pick up your feet. Tripping is a loose translation of that.
How you learn to get back on your feet. Yeah, it's not about...
How you learn to pick up your feet. Meaning there's rocks and stuff, and you keep on tripping on these rocks because you're not picking up your feet. Metaphor for life. Just pick up your feet. Just keep it moving and focus on what you're doing. So watch out for mistakes. So thanks to my brothers, I learned a lot of things on what not to do. Yeah. And from other comics, I learned on what not to do. So don't go home with the group. Hey, we're actually going to have a little party and drink at the house and everything. It doesn't always work out that way. You know, it doesn't work out. Then you become you were the great guy on stage, and now you're this guy that I'm done performing. Now I go back to what my real job is, which is watching the world so I could write more stuff, you know? But then every once in a while you get blessed, like JJ and I, we got blessed in New York, and we ended up, it was with Jim Jeffries. He does Madison Square Garden. He does, and then You were on the gig. So you do the garden.
And Russell Crowe was in my green room.
Then it was that magical night. Russell Crowe pops up, and then the RZA pops up because they're friends. Yeah, that makes sense. Of but course. Whatever.
Who? You know?
The RZA from the Wu-Tang.
Oh.
Okay. RZA, but they are friends because they've done RZA's a movie.
The director. Yeah, RZA directed Russell.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
And then after the party, but again, this is with Jim. After the party with Jim Jeffries, we end up after his performance. Then we end up seeing Billy Joel, the last four songs of Billy Joel. So we get just the hits.
That's
all you need. We didn't have to throw in, and we're close enough where we could throw stuff at Billy Joel. We enjoy that. We're all hugging because it's this magical Narnia moment that we're having.
Because also the timing's amazing because Jim Jeffries is a huge Billy Joel fan. So for Jim Jeffries to be doing his Madison Square Garden performance and Billy Joel to be doing his Madison Square Garden residency, like what a – it's magical, isn't it?
Yeah. Then we ended up at a rooftop party. I remember that night vividly. I can transcribe that night. We end up at a roof night. Jim is making fun of me because I don't drink, and he just sees me in the corner eating chicken fingers because that's what I do, right? And I'm watching over my boys because I'm hanging out with them, so I'm watching out for Jim. I'm making sure that people aren't just ordering because he threw his credit card down. I'm making sure that people aren't being savages trying to take advantage. JJ's having a few drinks, he's eating. Amos is with us also, right? I believe. And then all of a sudden, I'm telling Jim, I'm going to go. I'm going to head uptown to meet up. And Jim goes, no, you're not. And then he shows me the text. Then he showed JJ the text also. And it's basically Russell Crowe texting Jim, telling him, meet me here. Which is, by the way, magically a couple of blocks away from where we are, like walking distance from where we are.
It wasn't the text from Russell Crowe. Was that? Are you not entertained? Wait, wasn't that? No.
No, it was.
Pretty much.
Come be entertained.
Come be entertained. Yeah, we get there. Perfect timing. We're getting there, and it's turning real hood. You know,
Russell Crowe.
No, where we're going. It's turning real hood.
It was the Wu-Tang.
Well, don't give it away. You're messing up the story, brother. Russell Crowe. They've all been drinking, so everybody's feeling nice. JJ's feeling nice. Jim is feeling nice. Amos is feeling nice. I'm the only one that's not drinking, and I know where we're headed, so my head is on a swivel. So I'm looking on the swivel, and then Jim is like, because it was kind of like a coded message that Russell Crowe sent him. And he was just like, yeah. And then I see Black Escalade pull up on the side. No one's noticing. Door opens. Is the goddamn Gladiator jumps out of it. And then I go, Jim, Russell. Jim, like, hey, Russell. As soon as I see each other, love. The Ocean's part, we go inside, and what we go inside to is Wu-Tang's Clan 25th anniversary. Just Wu-Tang and their immediate family members. Private. This isn't a concert for fans.
Yeah,
this is,
yeah.
This
isn't at the club like at the VIP. No, this
no,
is
no.
Just
the whole place is VIP. Well, yeah, the whole place is like, yo, we're celebrating 25 years of Enter the Dragon.
Nice.
I have
36 chambers. I'm sorry.
Two big memories I need to mention about this. Do you remember where it was, Orlando? Do you remember the venue?
No, I don't remember the venue.
It was the back room. It was a Foot Locker. It was like a huge like storage. It was a Foot Locker basically.
There yeah.
Shoes and shit around. It was all the back. You know, it was epic. It was super huge.
Yeah.
So I remember that being like, holy shit, we're having a party. We're having a crazy party with Wu-Tang in the back of Foot Locker. And I remember how magical it felt when Q-Tip showed up. Because I have never witnessed, like, there's a couple of people, celebrities that I've met and when they just have this aura around them, and you're just like, you're made of magic. Like, I remember meeting Malin Ackerman, the actress, and I felt the same. I was like, oh, wow, okay, I can see why she's special. And Q-Tip radiates when he walked into the venue. Like, you could sense that he's in a venue. I was like, it blew me away.
But I
just remember JJ telling me this is like I'm inside of the, like, he says something very poetic. I'm probably paraphrasing, like, I'm inside the soundtrack of my youth, like that type of line, because it's all of them. They're all the only one that's not there, and he was probably there in spirit, was Old Dirty Bastard.
Yeah,
you know. And then Q-Tip shows up, and then and then for me it was Power shows up. And Power's like, yo, I recognize that voice. Power's like the financial backing of the Wu-Tang, like the money that you can't say really where it came from that backed the Wu-Tang.
Mm-hmm.
I met him years ago in Miami when we still had two-way pagers where you could type in the messages and send each other pagers. And he's like, I recognize that voice. And so he was like, yo, my man. And it was just like, and me, because JJ and me are really enjoying it.
I remember
Jim and Amos just drinking, sitting down and talking to Russell Crowe. But JJ and I went full on, like, yo, this is our youth right now.
That's really
happening.
That's awesome. Which,
that
by the way,
great travel. Yeah.
If JJ would have said that to me, I would have been like, all right, it's time for you to go home. You're drunk.
Yeah.
When he says that, this is the soundtrack to my youth. Okay, buddy, I'm gonna call an Uber for you. This is, you're done. But by the way, I do wanna say a couple of things. Orlando, I'm the same way when I go on the road. I think it's like it's a job for me. So I'm like anything that takes away from that, you know, like, yeah, like unless it's something bad. But yeah, I'm like I'm focused on the shows. I'm focused on the weekend or whatever I'm doing. And like it's hard for me to do other stuff while I'm there because then I'm also not even enjoying them. But then obviously when it's like Jim Jefferies and all that stuff, then that's like where you go like exception, fuck it, let's go and let's ride the train. And like, hey, if I know Leo DiCaprio, he sends me a text, meet me here, I'm fucking leaving. Yeah. Even if it's like Christmas morning.
Because you know it's going to be like, a great podcast story. Yeah. For us, it's selfish. We're like, this is going to be a great podcast story. We're in it and thinking it. Like, oh,
I don't care if I get there and it's Leo. By in the snow by
and
himself,
just,
like the Revenant, just killing a bear. I'm like, okay, that's fine. I'm still gonna use this story.
Weird. I'm not gonna put PETA in this. But.
Yeah, I thought it was gonna be some Victoria's Secret, but all right, whatever. All that's fine. Cool. That's cool. That's still cool.
Yeah. So when I again, like you, we're very similar. I'm on the road. I just like to, I watch TV and I watch like HGTV. Or I'll watch like Motor Trend where they're like building cars. But it's kind of just like noise in the background.
So that's generally the process when you arrive in a town and you check into the hotel. Does your, because my TV's on frequently in my hotel, it's the background, background noise.
It's that extra person in the room.
That's one way of thinking of it.
But you know what I love, which it has happened a couple of times, where you're with buddies, or it's that magical timing where, like, I'm at the Cellar and Francisco's at the Laugh Factory and JJ is at the LA Comedy Club and we're all in Vegas at the same time and we make that phone call and after our last show we meet up somewhere and have dinner, a late dinner. I've had that experience a couple of times and it's like, dude, you get like your battery just gets recharged. It's great, man.
Yeah, I really miss moments like that. Like, I'm looking forward to, like, it's going to be a good summer, right, everybody? We're all going to have a good summer and get back to, those are the moments that, like, I mean, hell, we all love being on stage more than anything, but the moments that we get in the green rooms, busting each other's balls and shooting the shit, sharing these stories, even being able to congratulate a friend who's just been on the Tonight Show, you know, like, I can't do that to you in person right now. I haven't been able to give you a hug or a high five. And, you know, and eventually our podcast will, Francisco and I are already dreaming of getting live again, having you on a couch with us. Yeah. So things like that, where I can't wait for it to return. You know?
What other questions? What else are we... Let's transition to more questions.
Well, I think we've pretty much torn through everything we wanted to know. Yeah.
Oh, well, man, just like that, we're almost at an hour. Well, wow.
We have one we have one that, obviously since you're, you were born in Puerto Rico and, you have that, like, background like me that you haven't just lived in the U.S., all same thing as JJ. Is there a tradition or custom that you love to bring to America, not even from Puerto Rico or the Dominican Republic, but from somewhere else that you have traveled?
Yeah,
you're like,
hey, you've definitely got these on your list, like something that you wish Americans would adapt, or take on.
I think what I would love, man, because through my travels it's been so great. If America, like just nationwide, if it would adapt more walking and it became a more walking friendly place, and if the train system, I don't understand why the train system doesn't work.
Because of the automobile industry, they fucked it up.
I don't understand how, I could fly into Rome and I can hop on a train and go down to the UK. Yeah. Or hop on a train and do all of Italy. Just all of Italy.
Yeah.
And it's like 59 bucks and go to Florence. And it's...
100%, brother. You ever think of it even in the context of Dodger Stadium, for example? When you go to Dodger Stadium, there's miles and miles of parking.
Yeah.
And some people are walking from further away. Whereas you look at venues in Britain and stuff, the trains pull right up to the venue. Like people are parking in their little suburbs or their neighborhoods, but you get to take trains. When you see aerial footage of stadiums anywhere else in the world, those stadiums are surrounded by communities and by homes and houses and stuff.
And I know the Northeast, they have that, but it's still not as...
Yeah, it's not as connected as...
Yeah, locally, like New York, you could get... It makes more sense to catch a cab from Midtown. It makes more sense to catch the train from Midtown down to the Cellar than to catch a cab. You know, way more, much sense. Yeah. Faster, you get there quicker. That makes sense. But I'm just talking about, it shouldn't be so hard for me to go to Iowa.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or even to, San Francisco. Even as simple as that. Let's say we have a gig there and we can, all right, I'll just go to the U.S. station, get a train and go to San Francisco and leave me right there. And
do the show and come back.
Same night. Yeah, I don't have to go to the airport. I don't have to drive 5 hours. It would be in 2 hours.
And it pops up. The train pops up in a central location inside San Francisco. It makes no sense, man. They always talk about it. Oh, we're building the bullet train and blah, blah, blah. I own CaliforniaBulletTrain.org. I'm dying for the bullet train to be built so I could sell that website name, bro.
Nice. Good luck.
I own .com. I own .com and .net also. They're all for sale on GoDaddy.
You know, we don't even have a train to the airport here.
Nah, they're still building that shit.
Yeah, it's gonna come by the Olympics, I guess. But
yeah,
but that is.
He has all the, yeah, even yeah, for the Olympics, but also even like, but one thing though, the only one that I've done here that is actually pretty good in terms of plane is when I went to the Angel Stadium, and I took a train from the Union Station to the Angel, and that's actually how, that one actually leaves you right in the stadium, in the Angel Stadium. So it's
and
like,
you took the train from where?
From Union Station.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Which I could have
that's
taken.
Really good.
So yeah. And I think we did it from like. And I think actually we took the train from Hollywood Station, like the yeah. subway, to Union Station, then yeah. Union Station.
Right there off of Western and Hollywood
yeah.
Boulevard.
Yeah. So that yeah. was again, like.
Which is a very dangerous station, by the way, which is a very yeah, really? Dangerous station. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. You're talking about the one right that's here, right? Right by
yeah,
the
yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah.
All right. I don't see any danger.
But yeah, I think that's the thing. I think, yeah, it should be so much better if everything was like that, because it's like.
I think that it just doesn't make sense. Like, you know, how great would it be for us if there was a train that we could just hop on and it dropped us off at La Jolla?
And plus, it's much better. Well, we all know we perform in New York, so yeah. we know how much fun that is from going to gig in one yeah. night in the subway, because you're working on your bits as you're yeah. going to the next bit. Like when yeah. we're driving, it's you're kind of doing it. Like I kind of do it, but you still got to fucking drive. You don't want to get in a crash, you know? So yeah. it's like, it's even much better as a comic to even do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. England is exactly like that as well. You know, you're on the underground between gigs and you get to run your bits in your head. You just get to be in your own zone. You know, have your headphones on and get there. It's weird.
I just thought it was fantastic. So that's the thing. I would bring that here if it was possible. I know that it would have, it's not even, I don't even think that hard, but it was just fantastic, man, to have that option. We went to, I'm not just bragging, I'm just saying we traveled, and you know what it was? We flew into Rome. We stayed in Rome a couple of nights. We caught a train.
Bragging, Orlando.
Yeah, yeah. And then we just stayed in Venice. And then from Venice,
that's
we stayed
awesome.
A couple
no,
of days,
great.
Caught another train, and we went to Florence.
Yeah,
and you know, and we had the option that I told my wife, "Yo, let's drop down to the UK," and she was just like, "Nah, let's just keep on, let's just stay in Italy."
Yeah,
but to have that option where we're like, "Yeah, let's
it's
go,"
great. It's great. Yeah, yeah, yeah. yeah. All right, and then what?
I don't think there's
go?
Any. I don't think there's any money in it in America, though. That's the thing, isn't it? And it's like you're saying, the automobile industry is there's just too much money there, so they'll make sure. But yeah. I was so stuck on that kind of travel when I first came here from Britain. I tried the buses. So I did take a bus to San Francisco and a bus to Vegas. I did try that each time. And it is because even buses are okay in Britain, you know.
Yeah.
And
yeah, no, here now, fuck that.
But here, holy cow. You guys, is no wonder you've all evolved into your cars in America.
Yeah, it's been completely designed for
a car
because you can't even you know, like I you could take a bus. I remember you could take a Greyhound from Miami to Orlando to Disney World, right? But it's like you're kind of gambling with your life.
Mm-hmm.
So you actually have to pay extra money. Like if you want to take at the time when I was a kid, it was called La Cubana, which are the luxury buses, and you pay like a big ticket price to ride these luxury buses from Miami to Orlando. And you're just like, even where the bus stop was so dangerous. Where the Greyhound bus stop was, like you would get off at that bus stop and you would be like, yo, this murder happens here. You know?
Yeah. Oh, when I took the bus to San Francisco when I first moved here 5 years ago, I took the bus to San Francisco, and you have to get it from like in by Union Station. And it was uncomfortable out there waiting for the bus.
I used to take the ones when I was living in DC, Maryland, you know, to go to New York, where it was like the Chinese buses. Like they were like, there was like a Chinese brand, and like they would actually drop you in Chinatown in New York. And they were like, I think they were like $20 or like $30 bucks for like two way. You know, but you know, we would do it as in college and shit. It was like, who gives a shit? You just want to go and party in New York and stuff like that. And it wasn't that, I mean, it was more dangerous than people who were driving. You know, I remember one guy, we were coming back to DC, and I think the guy was actually falling asleep. And we're like, me and my buddies were like watching him. We're like going like, kind of like, hey, hey, because he just kept fucking going. He's like, I was like, what? He's like, hey, man, like, just we're almost here, man. Like, fucking go to this. Like, so that was it. But I remember those weren't that dangerous. I mean, but I think, yeah, we do one last thing that we want to talk about is that is there any favorite pre-pandemic destination for shows or for vacation that you want to go or that you're missing or that you want to go back to or that you haven't been or you want to go, you know?
I haven't had the opportunity to travel like that. So, man, there's stuff on Instagram that I see, like in Switzerland and stuff like that I want to just go back to. Seattle, I really love, man. There's something about the woods. And
Seattle?
Yeah, Seattle also. I really like it. Alaska, like, because I've done all the type of comedies, and I'm not embarrassed of no end. So I've done the bar gigs. I've been on cruise ships. I've done Las Vegas. I've done, you know, A clubs, B clubs, C clubs. And I appreciate all the opportunities that I've ever had. Through the cruise ships, I was able to see Alaska, you know?
Yeah,
and I'm a nature guy also.
Princess?
Did you do Princess? I did Norwegian and CL.
Okay.
Because it's like, to me, they're the only ones that follow. It was designed by, their program was designed by stand-up comics.
Yeah.
So there's a host and there's a headliner and it's inside of a small club inside of the ship.
I did that one when I went to Bahamas, but not for, and that was like the thing. It's like, I was like, that was the last cruise I did. And I was like, this is actually enjoyable because the ones that I did for when I did Alaska was literally like in a big ass, you know, those big ass auditoriums.
Yeah.
And like, and yeah, of course, like,
and it's like, go do an hour.
Yeah.
Can you play some music before I come out? No. We don't have just.
And then it's like, and then you go up and it's like 200 people scatter around and there's like one like family with kids just like, hey, what's up?
Yeah.
And then old people just staring at you like, who is this? I was like, oh my God. Like,
no. Yeah. So I never had to do that because thanks to guys like you that tell those stories, I learned how to pick up my feet and I dodged those bullets. I was just like, oh no. When certain cruise lines would hit me up like, hey, you want to? Nah, I'm all right. So I just basically stuck with NCL because of that format, because they have a host. It's inside of a club inside with a low ceiling.
Yeah.
And because it was designed, I forgot who the comic was, but there were comedians were involved, consulted when the new ships were being built about how this should go. They actually reached out to comedians and they helped design.
And did you do, when you go on cruises, do you do anything outside of the cruise? You know, like outside of the ship, you know, like when people get like, you get a day to like.
So, yeah, that's the only if the other comic is like a phone comic.
Yeah.
Right. Because I'm the type of guy that I'll go to a country and the first thing that, like before we even land, I know where the embassy is. Like, I don't know where these worries come from, but I have these worries. But I
we're
know.
Latinos. That's why.
They
have the same ones. We're Latinos.
Hold on. They might have come from being put on an airplane as a toddler.
Yeah, it could
on
be.
Your own.
Yeah. It's in my DNA.
You might start to be concerned about where an embassy
is. So I know where the embassies are. Like, whether it's Morocco or the UK or Italy or France, I know where the embassies are. I have a passport license that I just got it. Yeah, I have that. I have the passport license. That way, I don't have to keep my passport always on me.
That's why I got it.
I can keep it somewhere else. I can keep it in a safe in the hotel or whatnot. What else? There you go.
He has it too. Yeah. Which is funny. That's a thing that only people that are not born in the U.S. do.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You could ask any American and be like, well, I don't even have a passport, bro.
What?
But we like would think like that because I'm the same way. If I'm going, I'm like, if I lose this, I have this, the next to tell me if I, you know, like shit like that.
So like with the cruises, you know, you take your license with you. You take your passport license with you. And you take a credit card, which is always, you know, for me, it's an American Express because if it, anything happens, American Express doesn't hesitate. If you dispute something, they're like, all right, you haven't disputed anything else. And they get you,
we'll
they
give
don't,
you the money back. Yeah,
yeah, they don't hesitate. That's about it, man. Do that.
So you do go do stuff outside with it.
Yeah,
like
yeah. But it has to be like, it has to be like the vibe with the other comic has to be like, because I've been on ships where it's, the comics is only a good person while they're in the green room and on stage. But as soon as they leave and they kind of take off the cape and the costume, it becomes more like, you know, it's their process. So if they're just people watcher, they don't want to do. And I also don't like, hey, come over to my room and let's work on some bits. And And I become real good at telling people, no, I don't do that. I just don't do that. And yeah. You know. So I've been on cruises that for 2 weeks I've been just on the cruise. I don't get off for anything. And then I've been in cruise ships where 1 week I don't do anything, and then the following week another comic gets on, and it's like, you know, I don't want to say the comic's name, but it's like one of my homies, and I'm like, what? And they're like, I didn't even know, everything. And next thing you know, we're ziplining in you know, in Belize.
Yeah. Yeah. That's cool. Yeah. That makes sense. I would do that.
Yeah, I'd do the same too. I enjoy my alone time. So.
Yeah. How are you guys with your traveling? Do you get all the stuff that you can possibly get to make it easier for you to travel?
Yeah.
For example, like TSA pre, clear.
Everything.
You know.
I mean, this is one of the first couple episodes that we did with me and JJ. Is like. JJ's the opposite. Like
I'm a very minimalist traveler.
For me, I realized, because you know, like same thing that you were saying, picking up your feet, and I learned like from the first times that I traveled, I was like, oh, you know what? If I'm gonna be doing this, you know, often, like I gotta find a better way that satisfies my, you know, my experience of traveling, because this is what mostly we do. So my thing is like, yeah, I get clear, I get the Admiral's Club, I get all the, you know, if I can get the first in, so I can get, I mean, as the group number quickly, if I can get a chance to go first class, I go in there, I get everything that's gonna make the least possible.
Yeah.
And then I learned later on too, to also like, oh yeah, for hotels too, like, oh yeah, I'm not gonna save money in some cheap ass hotel because to save $30. I'll pay $30 to be in some thing that I feel safe, not those motel ones that are fucking always like the horror movies.
Everything opens into the parking lot.
Those. You know,
yeah, like, I'm the same way, and it's JJ is more about quality of life with me.
But I think it's also as I got older, I learned that, because when I was started younger, I was like. Yeah, you know,
and I think we all might be old enough to remember that your people used to be able to take you all the way to the gate. My mom, when I was a kid, used to go all the way to the gate with me. I used to go all the way to the gate with my brothers and then just wave at the plane like in the movies.
Yeah.
There's a whole generation of kids. You ask my goddaughter, she's 18 years old now. She doesn't even know what I'm talking about. You know, when I tell her, you used to go all the way to the gate. And probably now that helped out Trap, but like now, dude, I was traveling and not using my clear, and I just used it now coming back from Vegas for the first time, because it was so empty that I could just move through, and this time like the line was so packed to get back to the air to get through. Even the TSA pre line, because so many people have caught up to that, and then I was just like, "Oh, I forgot, I'm a clear member." Got my clear, they walked me right through, and this lady got so mad. She goes, "That's the third person. What is it about these people? Why are they getting escorted? They must be late to their plane." And I don't say nothing. I don't say, "Oh, I have clear, ma'am." I don't say nothing because I don't want her to know.
Yeah.
No, I don't spend the extra on those perks and stuff like that. I just show up early for my flight and then I chill. I like to have as little interaction with people. I've just never seen the benefit of not waiting at the flight and then going to another place to go get a buffet, a stale buffet meal and stuff. I've had years of the perks. And yeah. I guess I didn't find them perky enough. So instead I've done, all right, fuck
those,
it. I'll just
leave me alone. Yeah, but I guess that other perk is, okay, so here's when, this is just the comedian in me. Well, my first audition for the Tonight Show was in New York. I auditioned for it. And I flew to New York, and I didn't even have a hotel when I went to audition. And the auditions was later on in the day. So all I did was get off the airplane at JFK, and I went straight into the lounge. And just hung out in the lounge and in the recliner.
And that's nice.
Yeah,
it's like
There was recliner. The Wi-Fi is free.
You can even take a shower if you need to.
I took a shower.
Oh, okay.
I took a shower, grabbed my little roller bag, and I went straight to Caroline's to run my first set. And then the next day was the audition. And then because I also waited later on in the day, so I ran my set at Caroline, and after my set, I opened up my app Hotels Tonight, and I got a great hotel room for just paying the taxes.
Yeah. No, I think it to me, I'm the same way. I gotta, if anything that's gonna make it easier to be on the road, I'll do it. You know, like apps, whatever. You know, I'm not. I think to me, because to me, it's always like, as a comic or even as a entertainment artist that travels for touring, it's like. To me the hardest job is the travel. That's the job, like the traveling part. Like doing the show is the easiest thing.
That's why they pay us.
Yeah, that's why they pay us.
It's the travel. We're the middlemen of our own product. They pay us to do the traveling and deliver it. Yeah. 100%, man. We've gone over,
great.
Of course, because you're so awesome, such a great guest, dude. But I almost don't want to say goodbye to you, but I guess there's an element of professionalism we have to have.
We have the question that you always ask.
But like side note, the people that do watch this, if they're watching it live or they're watching it later, we all are friends, and that's why it flows so naturally. And we haven't seen each other in a while, so.
Yeah, true. Man, looking forward to hopefully seeing you soon. Please check out Orlando's comedy. If you're listening to us live, I've been putting comedy in my Discord as well. So check out his stand-up. We've been tweeting out his stand-up as well all week. Guys, get into Orlando.
And you can follow him at Hey Lando, right? That's all
Hey Lando. Everything across the board.
Yeah, buddy. Thank you for having me on, man.
Thank you, bro.
We always have one final question that we ask our guests on the way out the door, and that is, you've already given us some great like words of wisdom that were handed down from your mother and stuff like that, but is there a specific piece of travel advice that pops into your head, like a great travel tip that either you give or that you've been given over the years that you would like to tell our audience?
Mind your own business.
That's a good one.
All right. Okay. Don't ask clear.
If you see someone that's about the I don't know, their luggage is broke. Just let people be.
What about crime?
Yeah, that's from personal experience where I've tried to help people and they've lost it because they're not themselves. We make them. Okay, so here's the thing that we Triple make the brain. Mistake. Yeah, no, we make the mistakes. That everybody travels as much as we do, and they don't. That's the first person ever, like the first time traveling.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's that person that doesn't know how to put the luggage in the overhand.
And if you sit in an aisle seat,
and the plane is still boarding, lean into the thing. Don't sit up straight. Just lean into towards the window.
Don't hit.
And then people get up and their butts are in your face and stuff. I haven't flown first class that many times. I'm only up to economy comfort. So,
which by the way, I do have an advice for first class. Like if you get it, like do like this is for domestic flights, but like get the ones like that you're going from like LA to New York. Or like stuff like that, like where it's like, because those are the even business class are really good. Like those are good. Because if you get the like first class from LA to Dallas, don't even bother. it's yeah. just it's just a bigger seat, but it doesn't. You don't get any of the of the. So
yeah,
get
I flew back from.
Ah, there you go. See, now you're getting on my train. There we go.
Yeah. I flew back from Italy in beds. It was like laid down flat beds.
That's
and
what
then
I mean.
I was like, how am I supposed to go back there anymore? How am I supposed
yeah,
to
yeah, yeah. That's the thing. It's like after you go that, it's like, can't go back to being a peasant again.
Yeah. So, the best advice that I got is just from personal experience. And plus, people are real agitated. They're not listening. And, you know, you get people. My wife was just on a plane and she was FaceTiming with us. And a lady tried to help another lady, and the lady said, yo, just mind your own fucking business. And she was just legit trying to help her. Like,
yeah,
mind your, like people are that. So now if you're traveling, just, yo, just mind your business. Don't say anything unless it's with you, the problem that that they're bringing it to you. Don't say anything. Just enjoy it. Try to laugh.
Yeah,
that's try true. To laugh. I think it's also like you said, Orlando, like unless somebody asks you for help or for something, then you can help. But like sometimes we think it's like, hey, this person does, and then it's the same thing. We try to be nice, and then it turns out into this whole bullshit. And it's like, you know what? Forget it. I was just trying to be nice. It's like, you know.
Yeah, that's happened to me already.
And Carol says, great episode, Orlando. So thank you for for delighting us with your travel stories and advice and it's great to always we know each other, but it's always great to know more of you as well. So thank you for coming here. Buddy.
Thank you both, man. We're almost out of this, guys. We're almost out of this.
Almost.
Yeah.
So we're going to miss it. Oh, are we going to miss it?
I know.
We're going to miss it.
I can't have to do a 11:30 spot. Can I just stay home? Yeah. I don't want to fucking,
Do these many people need to be in this elevator right now? What happened to the little four circle spots?
Having
all the space.
All the space, and all right. Thank you so much, guys.
Thanks, thank you. Buddy.